From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
Democrats are out with a new map for Illinois. Now, let's make clear, this map isn't any good for navigating on a road trip, but it is a road map to political power.
And grateful to serve my community and my neighbors. But the decisions that we make and the decisions that I make, right, collectively with my colleagues, impact our entire state. And this one is truly one that I take very seriously.
Well, the old boss is gone, but the new boss has the same old boss's ways. And it came home to roost today in the indictment of the man who used to run this entire operation and whose shadow is cast across these proceedings today, because it's the same way that the majority is doing business as they've always done.
That's the Springfield Republican House member Tim Butler referencing redistricting and also an indictment this week of another individual close to the former Illinois House Speaker Michael Madigan. We also heard from Democrat Omar Aquino as his party moves forward with new legislative boundaries. We're in the final days before Monday's scheduled General Assembly adjournment, and still a lot is left on the table, and we'll talk about it here on State Week. In Springfield, I'm Sean Crawford. Our panel today includes Charlie Wheeler, emeritus professor and former director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. He's also a longtime State House reporter and observer. Also with us, Hannah Meisel, NPR Illinois State House editor. And joining us today, we have Amanda Vinicky with WTTW's Chicago Tonight. And Amanda, it's always good to have you back with us.
I love being back, Sean.
Well, let's start about talking about what's happening at the Capitol as we sit down to record this show. It is Friday morning. Still a lot going on. Lawmakers have until pretty much the end of Monday to try to meet their self-imposed deadline of trying to adjourn on time. Hannah, we've been watching and waiting for legislative maps from Democrats. It is redistricting time. And last Friday, we got what was apparently the first draft. Now there's a second version, and I guess there were be a lot of people who haven't seen these plans, so tell us what we need to know about them.
Let's be clear. It was a Friday night when Democrats dropped their first version of these new legislative maps. And even then, at least on the House side, there were no, there were just PDF files, and it was very difficult to tell where the boundaries actually fell. And it wasn't until later, I believe Sunday afternoon, where Google Maps, interactive maps, where you could actually zoom in and, you know, check where the boundary lines fell, were even published. And then 2 days of redistricting hearings, kind of heard from the same folks that, you know, they've been hearing from all spring in these kind of sparsely attended Zoom and a few in-person hearings all around the state. And then last night, Thursday night, Democrats published a second version of the maps that include slight tweaks that they heard from community advocacy organizations this week. And, you know, that gives them cover to the against the argument that, oh, you know, Democrats are not listening to these community advocacy organizations.
Well, Amanda, the party in power always draws the map to favor them. No surprise with that. Republicans aren't happy. Just how bad do these maps look for Republicans?
I'd say pretty bad. And it's not just me. I spoke with a maps consultant who said that these maps are more aggressive than under Speaker Welch and President Harmon than they were even under the vaunted, you know, Madigan days. So they do appear to be pretty bad, not as bad as the first draft, granted, but there are a whole lot of Republican incumbent matchups where they're put into the same districts. And, you know, part of that could be, you haven't heard Democrats make this defense, but there are population losses. There's going to be some change. Some of that just might be natural, but it certainly does appear as if a lot of this is rooted in partisanship. It's been interesting just even Friday morning listening to, there are concurrent redistricting hearings between the House and the Senate. And I was listening to the House one, and it was pretty striking. You had the bill sponsor, State Representative Hernandez, saying that it wasn't until last night that she learned and was able to understand what data was used to draw the districts. And that is something that Republicans took her to task for, saying, wait a second, you're the bill sponsor. This is a mockery of what the legislative process is supposed to be. Further, that these new sets of maps, the ones that will presumably be made, it passed by the General Assembly, I was about to say turned into law, but really that's where I think, Sean, the next thing is going to be the pressure on Pritzker to take action on this, given his public promises to veto any gerrymandered map or any map that was drawn at the behest of legislative leaders. So that's really where this is going to go. But just, you know, hours, not even, of a heads up for all of these community groups that have been so very closely following this process before the hearings were held.
Now, Charlie, you've said before, you think the governor will go ahead and sign these maps, sign these into law. Is it really a difficult decision for him? I thought to myself this morning, I thought, I can't remember anybody who's lost an election based on their views about redistricting. In fact, maybe it's just the opposite. Your thoughts on Pritzker's situation?
When Governor Pritzker runs for re-election, I don't think whether or not he signs the new redistricting bill is going to be very high on people's judgment. I think they'll be more concerned with how was the pandemic handled, what were the problems at the LaSalle Veterans Home, what the heck's going on with the Department of Employment Security, things like that that affect people in their everyday lives. And so I don't think that there would be much problem for him, particularly since he's modified. Earlier he said, well, I'd veto anything that was drawn by legislators. Part of that was conditioned upon there being a commission, an independent commission that would draw the lines. Well, we've passed the point at which you could have an independent commission. And so now, if the legislature doesn't do it, it goes to a very partisan, bipartisan commission. If they deadlock, as has happened more often than not in the past, then it goes to a random draw of a person's name to be the ninth tiebreaker on that commission. And again, historically, that ninth tiebreaker has been a partisan. And so we wind up with a gerrymander. And the only question is it a Republican gerrymander or is it a Democratic gerrymander? And the Republicans, for all their complaints and their belly aching, what they are going for, if they would be honest with you, is they are hoping for this Hail Mary chance of it going to the commission that will deadlock, and they get a Republican name drawn to be the ninth member, and then they can gerrymander the maps, just as happened back in 91.
Now, Charlie called that a Hail Mary, and Hannah, I would think that's pretty accurate here, maybe even a real Hail Mary, because the Democrats seem like they are moving ahead on this. There's probably not going to be any chance that they don't move ahead, right?
Well, right. But the other thing is, you know, lawsuits are coming, and although redistricting lawsuits historically have not been all that successful, there are a few that have. And, you know, because Democrats are using American Community Survey and not census data because the census data is delayed, that's a novel legal argument that they can make. And so, you know, Republicans and advocacy organizations especially are banking on, you know, that being a possible way to make changes later. Now, Democrats are not stupid. You know, they might act, you know, they're doing a pretty good, they're doing a pretty good, act, I would say, of, you know, pretending to be ignorant of some of these, elements here, but they know that, challenges are happening. And because of that novel legal argument, the maps might be changed, and they would rather still, have the chance to have some influence and change them, and you know, work with possibly with advocacy organizations as that is under a court review if that happens, than of course letting Republicans have that 50-50 chance of controlling the map making process.
What's going to happen is the maps will be passed, they'll be signed into law, there will be a court challenge, that's inevitable, there's always been one in the past, and although the court challenges have been, I guess you would say, semi successful in that the during the court hearings, the party that drew the maps will make some adjustments. The bottom line is that the gerrymanders have remained in place. And I noticed one of the things that the Democrats did, which kind of surprised me, we talked about it earlier, is they the other day they came out with a revised version. The initial version had a whole bunch of Republicans packed together into districts. There was one prospective district that had four incumbent Republicans. Well, they modified this, and now there's maybe only half as many Republicans packed in with each other. And usually that's what they would do during the trial proceedings. They would make this adjustment. They say, okay, well, we'll accommodate the other party. They also made a point of saying that we adjusted the boundaries in this one north side district to try and maintain as a community the Orthodox Jewish folks who live up in that area. And we were responding to criticism we heard in our hearings. So they're laying the groundwork for the challenge in court. I guess the most easy thing to criticize about the maps for the last, I don't know, basically for the last 40 or 50 years has been that they hardly are compact. They look like some kind of a Rorschach drawing, whether it was Republicans who did it or Democrats. And in one of the resolutions explaining the maps that was introduced today, the authors pointed out that these new maps we're proposing, they're as compact overall as the existing reapportionment, or pardon me, redistricting. So they're saying, well, yeah, maybe these aren't nice rectangles and squares, nice geometric figures, but they're just the same as they've been in the past. And again, in my mind, all the stuff that's going on, these hearings, the debate, everybody's playing their role. The Democrats would be saying what the Republicans were saying if the rules were reversed, and the Republicans would be saying what the Democrats are saying if the rules were reversed. And it's all trying to create a record that when it goes to the inevitable court challenge, the Democrats can come in and say, well, here's how we responded to X, Y, and Z. And I think one of the things that Governor Pritzker will be able to say is that this map does maximize the potential for people of color to elect representatives of their choice.
Amanda, catch us up to date here, because it's not just legislative districts for the state House and Senate, but we're also hearing there's a map out there now that Democrats are pushing to, for the first time in about 60 years, would change the Supreme Court boundaries. And also, we still don't know what's going to happen with congressional districts, correct?
Yeah, we've seen or heard nothing with congressional districts. So that is going to be, I'm predicting, a story for another month. The Supreme Court, however, is very much part of this package. And as you noted, Sean, the first time that we're seeing a change there in some 60 years, again, there have been some pretty major population shifts over those 50 years, over that time. So it is perhaps past time for this to be done. At the same juncture, this is something that raises eyebrows at the very least, or is perhaps pretty obvious on the part of Democrats trying to protect the advantage they now have on the Supreme Court, seeing as this comes after Justice Kilbride lost his bid for retention. And so his, of course, is one of those districts where you see a major shift in what appears to be a bid by Democrats to keep slash win that seat versus losing it to Republicans' hands. And then therefore, again, losing the that little bit of advantage that they have on the state's high court.
One of the things I would say that the Democrats have going for them in the remap of the Supreme Court districts is that although the Constitution says these districts outside of Cook County are supposed to be substantially equal in population, the current district that's in the northern tier of the state has roughly 2.5 times the number of people that are in the southern district, the southern third of the state. And so the Democrats are saying this is hardly substantially equal. So under this redistricting plan that they put forward, that Northern Illinois district will be about 1.8 million. The Central district will be about 2 million. Where Springfield is will be about 2 million, and the one in Southern Illinois will be about 1.8 million. So they're roughly equal population.
You're listening to State Week. I'm Sean Crawford. Our panel includes Charlie Wheeler, Hannah Meisel, and Amanda Vinicky from Chicago Tonight. Hannah, a couple other issues out there. One of them is the state budgets. Do we know, and just with only really several hours to go before the legislature wraps up, what the budget's going to look like?
No, we don't. We have not seen any final outlines. We have not seen any, bill legislation. I know that I think it was earlier this week, the days blend together. The House and Senate send each other shell bills that the budget language will be inserted into. But no, we don't know. However, we've gotten increasingly sunnier and sunnier predictions on where our revenues will be for this current fiscal year, which ends June 30th. And, our economy is recovering from the pandemic more quickly than anyone really would have thought. That has taken pressure off of the budget. But like we discussed last week, paying off our federal debt when Illinois had to be, was the only state to have to take advantage of that Federal Reserve lending program last year. That has been an interesting wrinkle because our stimulus money can't be used to pay down debt. And so the governor, of course, made that, he's a pressure point. Well, we have to fill our budget holes. And the only way that we can do that is closing those close to $1 billion in corporate tax loopholes, or, what businesses call tax incentives, tax credits. But in recent days, it's been clear that he won't get all of that $1 billion because we really won't have to. But it will take just a little bit of the enmity off the table. And one of those programs is this private school tax credit that was signed into law by former Governor Bruce Rauner as part of that overall education funding package 4 years ago. And the governor campaigned on phasing that program out. It's already supposed to phase out in a couple of years anyway. He made a handshake agreement with Republicans that he wouldn't touch it. And then going after kind of a small $75 million program, they felt as if, that was in bad faith. So it sounds like that might be off the table. We've seen a lot of advocates come down to Springfield, even though they can't really come inside the Capitol. They've been outside every day. Making a showing really, I think, sometimes helps.
Amanda, also behind the scenes going on, a lot of negotiating on an energy package. Can you give us an update on what we know at this point?
This is so complicated, Sean. You have energy issues, which are complex on top of themselves. And then there is added heat to this, if you will, given that, of course, this week we saw Madigan's former chief of staff, Tim Mapes, indicted, which brings light, lots of little energy puns working in here, that brings attention, if you will, to all of these corruption issues. And so even as you have Exelon asking for another subsidy, this is just the law that was cited in the indictments of Madigan, the members of Madigan's circle. So there are continuing discussions. We don't have a number for what the subsidy would be that ratepayers across Illinois would be paying to Exelon in order for the company to keep open a pair of nuclear plants. And this is something that is important because you just actually Friday morning had a rally of people who work at these plants. Those are strong union jobs. And then also because another part of this energy package is trying to reach goals of carbon-free and going renewable energy, carbon-free nuclear is a source of that. So Sean, I cannot tell you, people who are involved seem to go from optimistic that a comprehensive energy package is going to get through before adjournment and then feeling quite disappointed that there isn't any sort of agreement. There does seem to be some belief that that MAPES indictment perhaps made Exelon take a step back and say that they recognize that they are not going to get all that they want and demand, and that this is a new day in Springfield.
Well, Amanda, when it comes to Exelon, Commonwealth Edison, they have always had a lot of power, no pun intended, at the Capitol with lawmakers. Has that been hurt, or are you still thinking that's there? Do they still have that type of, maybe not to push what they want all the way through, but do they still have a lot of pull when it comes to the legislature?
You know, I don't think it's quite the same cachet that they once had, but they certainly still do hold, yes, we've got to say it, power. They do. There's a long history there. And there has been some really quality reporting about also the charitable contributions that Exelon, ComEd give. By the way, those do essentially come from us, the ratepayers, the ones who are paying the bills. But nonetheless, that goes to districts, and that is something that legislators are often thankful for. There are a lot of lobbyists who are tied into this. And I also think a complication is that it is so hard to understand, so complex. This, even as we're talking about redistricting, the budget, the innumerable other pieces of legislation that members of the General Assembly are concerned with. So there's top level negotiations, but it's difficult, I think, for legislators to really get a full comprehension of what all is in this package. You know, I will say it appears to me, kind of, this is, I think, one way to describe it, that it's what legislators are fighting against is a legacy of both political power that ComEd and Exelon have, and then also it's as if they are wanting all the advantages of having a monopoly, which they do, but without any of the accompanying regulations. And so that is something that thus far they have been able to really preserve.
Well, it was mentioned that this week federal prosecutors indicted the former Madigan chief of staff, Tim MAPES, on perjury charges. They say he lied to a federal grand jury. He has pleaded not guilty. This has brought a lot of speculation, though, about what the feds have or don't have on the former speaker. And Charlie, I'm going to go to you. You've followed Tim MAPES and been around him for a long time. Your thoughts on the latest activity we've seen with this case?
Well, it occurs to me that obviously Tim MAPES is not the target that U.S. District Attorney John Lausch is going for. And it's one of those deals where it's, hey, you tell us what we want to know or else we're going to charge you with something. And so far, MAPES has not flipped. Whether or not he will, I don't know. But I guess we should remember that the allegations are that he lied to the grand jury. And his attorneys say, no, he didn't lie. He pled not guilty. So we'll have to see what happens. I mean, MAPES could tough it out, wind up going to trial, wind up being convicted, serve time in prison. He could be acquitted, or at some point down the road, he can call up the U.S. attorney and say, well, I think maybe my recollection, I told you before the grand jury, I really didn't recall, but now thinking about it, it's come back to me. And I can tell you this, that, and the other thing about my contacts with Michael McLean and with the speaker. You know, so there's a lot of opportunities and possibilities out there. And I think we just have to wait and see. But as I said at the onset, who John Lausch is really trying to get is Michael Madigan.
Well, just a couple of minutes left here. Hannah, what's been the reaction at the State House this week?
You know, not Dems didn't really react. I mean, it's not really in their best interest because they are, of course, trying to move on. Whether they were, you know, loyal to Madigan or not, they know that it doesn't help them to try to defend him in any way. Republicans, of course, try to make this an issue. As we heard at the top of the show, Republican State Rep Tim Butler from this area, you know, saying this is the shadow that's still cast over this building. And, you know, it echoes, it reverberates in the arguments over redistricting, especially also energy policy. It's just, Madigan might be gone, but his shadow, his ghost still haunts the Capitol 100%. I also want to point out about MAPES. he had immunity. He was given immunity. The chief federal judge told him that, you know, if you lie with immunity, you'll be convicted of perjury, or sorry, you'll be charged with perjury at the very least. And he still allegedly lied. Loyalty is a hell of a drug.
And I want to also point out one of the ironies is we're talking about what is or isn't going to get done before the end of the spring session. Throughout all of this, there has still not been action on a major ethics package. Will that happen? I don't know how legislators can leave Springfield without that, given all of these swirling indictments in the ongoing federal investigation. But even if it does, it is something that will pass without a whole lot of public hearing or scrutiny, given that there are only 3 days left.
All right. Well, it's time now for our notes from the field. And Charlie, let's go to you first.
Well, here's something looking forward already to next November's election. The legislature has placed on the ballot a proposed constitutional amendment that would provide that workers have a fundamental right to organize and engage in collective bargaining about wages, hours, and working conditions. And it would also prohibit the state or any local government from enacting the so-called right to work laws, which prohibit making joining a union a condition of your employment. And the proposal has cleared both chambers with some Republican support, 9 Republicans in the House, 11 of them in the Senate. It will be before the voters in November of 2022. And if 3/5 of the people voting on the amendment approve it, or if a majority of the people voting in the election approve it, it will become law. And in a way, it's kind of like the final thumbing your nose at Bruce Rauner.
Amanda?
At long last, Illinois authorized letting licensed establishments do cocktails to go. That was just a temporary pandemic era change, but it has been extended. Also, by the way, something that you may see at your neighborhood watering hole coming up soon, free shots, beer, wine, what have you, if you show proof of COVID vaccine.
And Hannah.
It has been more than a year since the state was supposed to have awarded its first round of social equity cannabis licenses to folks who whose communities have been impacted by the war on drugs. COVID and really underlying problems with how the law laid out its scoring process delayed the licenses, all the while, you know, the cannabis industry in its first, 17 months, you know, got up and running, and the companies that are mostly white owned that were operating in the medical cannabis space before recreational was legalized, they got a huge leg up in this burgeoning, very fast growing industry. And so finally, you know, there is a agreed to fix to get more licenses out the door more quickly, actually, than the original law had intended. But those 75 licenses have been held up. And so now another 110 will be awarded at some point.
That's all the time we have for this edition of State Week. Our panel included Charlie Wheeler, Hannah Meisel, and Amanda Vinicky with Chicago Tonight. I'm Sean Crawford. You can get a podcast of this show at nprillinois.org or through the NPR One app. And join us next time.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capitol by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.